Welcome back to Dakota Midday from South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. Tuberculosis was once thought to be a disease of the past, but it's now the second leading cause of death from an infectious disease on the planet. In a new PBS Frontline documentary airing tomorrow evening on SDPB-TV called TB Silent Killer, filmmaker Jezza Newman travels to Swaziland, the country with the world's highest incidence of TB. Swaziland is a small country bordering South Africa and Mozambique. The documentary is an intimate, gut-wrenching portrayal of the devastating impact of TB on the lives of people at the pandemic's epicenter. Jezza Newman's previous Frontline documentaries have covered child trafficking, child poverty, and life in occupied Tibet. I spoke with the filmmaker earlier this morning and asked him what led to his exploration of tuberculosis in Swaziland.
Well, the kind of films I tend to make are films looking at subjects and issues that really don't get a mainstream voice. So, and going to places that people don't often go to. And over the years, having worked in China, Tibet, Zimbabwe, to name a few, I have built up a sort of an association with various organizations that work on the ground. And one of the people that had helped me in other areas at different times was Médecins Sans Frontières, or Doctors Without Borders, as they're known here. And Sophie Scott of the UK office basically was chatting to me and said that TB was something that, you know, they found it really difficult to get people to sit up and listen to the issues surrounding it, and felt that it was, you know, had a real strong human story at its heart, and so we looked into it, and then you know, as things developed, the BBC first came on board, and said, yeah, sure, let's make the film, and so we went ahead, and then Frontline later on came on board as well. It's obviously a bit of a different film for Frontline. You know, this is a sort of a pure documentary at its heart. You know, following these characters and their stories. You know, it's not loaded with talking heads and facts and figures and sort of hardcore current affairs. This is the real human essence of the story and the human cost, if you like. And that's sort of the sorts of films I make, and this was an opportunity to tell a story about these people and about an issue that whilst this story is centered around Swaziland, this is a story that's playing out across the world, and it's an airborne disease, so it travels.
What makes this documentary so powerful is that even though these people are on the other side of the world, they're just like anyone we know here, even in South Dakota. There's a 10-year-old girl who loves to dance, a young man who lives for sports, in his case, soccer. Was that part of the goal in making this documentary, to really put that human face on this devastating disease?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's tough. People's lives are busy, hectic, crazy these days, you know. So, you know, in the first place, to ask an American to come home from a hard day and sit in front of their television to watch something that's not something you can just escape with. It's a hard watch. You need to put in the time, and so you have to find ways to make it something that will capture their people's imaginations and hold them. And so, yeah, the idea is to take this faraway place that many people won't have heard of and make it feel that it's actually here, that the people you're watching, like you say, Nokbega, you know, she's a little girl who loves to dance, wears the color pink, you know, she's like any little girl next door. That is part of when you're out there finding people to take part. You know, not only are you looking for the sort of journalistic story, the story that tells the story, if you like, but it's also about how do you bring that back in a way that will capture people to sit and watch it, because, you know, in this day and age, and I accept that, you know, it is hard to ask people to watch, you know, 80 minutes of television when at the end of a long day, you know. But if you do invest the time, I believe that it's it informs you about something that you might not know about, but on on a simplistic level, I think, just on a human level, the courage that Not Beggar shows in this film is phenomenal, and what she goes through and how she comes out the other side, and then how Beggy's family and his mother, given what happens to his sister, you know, how they get through it and have such, you know, I don't know, I find it inspiring, and I hope that other people will too.
How difficult was it to find Nukbeka and Beggy, these people who were willing to participate in the documentary and have their lives portrayed in this very intimate manner?
It's always the hardest part of the film because ultimately, you know, there are all sorts of local issues depending on what film you're making. In this instance, you know, TB comes with a high level of stigma because in Swaziland they have high rates of HIV, which, as you know, that comes with its own stigmas. And so when people then had TB, it was like, oh, well, you know, if you have TB, don't come near me because I might get it. And it's all based on misunderstandings and people not knowing quite how it's transferred and et cetera. But obviously, you know, there were high levels of stigma. There were those, therefore, who were happy to be part of the film but didn't want it shown in Swaziland or South Africa where they might have relatives. And, you know, in this day and age, you could, you know, I can guarantee that it won't be shown on national television because I can make sure it's not sold to those stations. However, you can't guarantee it's not going to be seen on the web or, you know, in some other form. So, you know, those aren't guarantees you can make. So, you know, there was an occasion that we'd filmed with one boy for, you know, several weeks. And it was only after then that the mother said, actually, I don't want the scene in Swaziland. I'm worried, you know, I'm separated from his father and his father might make things difficult, etc. And my relatives might not like it. And so I had to let that go, you know, and as I say, in that instance, we'd actually been filming for quite a while and you kind of have to go, oh, well, you know, start again. But, you know, that's part of the course and that's part of what we do, because ultimately, you know, the filming process has to be something that the people who take part gain something out of it. It has to either be, you know, an enjoyable process or a process that, you know, we give as well as take, because, you know, very few of them will actually benefit from anything that the film manages to achieve, because by then it will be too late for them.
How tough was it for you as a filmmaker to talk with people, not only Nukbeka and Beggy, but also the people in the hospital that you visited, some of whom were very near death?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm a human being. I'm a father, you know, so of course I care and I have compassion. And it can be tricky at times. However, I know I'm there to tell this story. And if I don't tell this story and I don't tell this story to the best of my ability, then it will achieve nothing. You know, I had to make the best film I possibly could. So, you know, there's no place for me to have emotion. I have to just pocket that up and put it away and deal with it later. You know, at the time on the ground, my focus needs to be to capture those moments, as heart-rending as they may be. And there were some in this film. There were some pretty tough moments. But I know it's not my, you know, it's not my time to cry. It's their time to cry. It's their time to tell us about how their lives are being torn apart. You know, I have no place to do that there. That's not right. You know, I keep it away and I do it later. I'm lucky, I suppose, in a way. I have a camera between me and them, and in a way, it is something you'll have heard other cameramen will tell you. It does give you a kind of a distance from the emotion. It's weird, but it does. And it really helps. But ultimately, you know, the driving force is that they are opening their lives to me to tell a story, and I need to do that with the best ability that I can.
You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. We're talking to filmmaker Jezza Newman. His frontline documentary, TB Silent Killer, airs tomorrow evening on SDPB TV. Now, this takes place in Swaziland, and why is it that tuberculosis is so prevalent in this country? Is it also because of, as you mentioned earlier, that HIV is so prevalent in this country as well?
Yeah, absolutely. In this particular country, yes. So TB is a social disease. It's a disease that will manifest itself in places where there is deprivation of or basically people with lowered immune systems. So you'll find that in places of high levels of poverty, and that's how we had it in the West. When TB was prevalent in the West, it was at a time when, you know, housing conditions were very poor, people had poor nutritional levels. So in the case of Swaziland, it has the highest rates of TB infection in the highest rates of HIV infection in the world, and so therefore this was a perfect breeding ground for TB, you know, for the TB bacteria to manifest itself and come out as a full-blown disease. And so that's what's happened, and that's why Swaziland now has the highest rates per capita of TB. However, that doesn't mean you don't see it elsewhere where there isn't HIV. You know, other parts of the world, HIV is not the main cause of why people have TB. So in Eastern Bloc countries, often it's the living conditions which is causing people to have poor immune systems. And in other places of the world, you see high rates in China, you see them in India, and often that can be down to nutrition. So, you know, yes, in Swaziland, that's the reason for there, but that was part of what we had to be careful about in the film. I didn't want people to walk away from this film and go, oh, well, I don't have HIV, so I don't need to worry. You do need to worry because it does spread, and I made a film the year before last in America called Poor Kids, and it highlighted how poverty levels were growing in America, there was an increased use of food banks, how other issues involved with poor nutrition like diabetes was on the rise. And these are known sort of social conditions that will cause TB bacteria to thrive. So, you know, it is a very real issue. And as our economies crumble and poverty levels rise, there's a distinct possibility we could yet again see, TB coming back into our culture.
And compounding this problem, as you raise in the documentary TB Silent Killers, that there's multi-drug resistance TB, MDR-TB. There's also, as I understand it, almost incurable XDR, extensively drug-resistant TB.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the real worry, to be honest. You know, for the West, even if you had an ordinary TB outbreak, you know, the drugs aren't expensive and they are not, they don't have the toxicity that the drug resistant drugs do. So, you know, ordinary TB, you know, you'll probably be fine. We could deal with that, we can handle that. It's these drug resistance that are causing the problem, because these are old drugs developed, the youngest of which was developed nearly 40 years ago. They're highly toxic, so they have horrific side effects, and therefore people aren't, they're not adhering to their drug regime, to the treatment, and thus it's mutating again. And this is how this happens. So with ordinary TB, there were areas of the world where, you know, countries were poor, they didn't sustain the drug supply, or people just had lives where they didn't always take the pills. They thought they could maybe miss one or two, and it mutates. It's not like taking a multivitamin every day. You know, you can miss your multivitamin. It's no big deal. But with these pills, you need to take them all the time. And so what happened is it mutated into what they called drug resistant and then multi-drug resistant. That's about the number of drugs that aren't working now. Basically, how it started out was that if you missed your regime and you mutated and your TB mutated, then that was it in isolation. However, what they found now is that if you've got multi-drug resistant, you can now pass that on to someone in its multi-drug resistant form. So somebody else doesn't need to default medication. They can go straight to multi-drug resistant TB. You don't need to have gone through those stages of default to get there, and that's the worry, that's the concern, because obviously that means someone could potentially travel to Swaziland, receive the bacteria, come back to the US, interact with someone with a lowered immune system, and pass the MDR straight to them. It doesn't need to be, you know, going through TB first.
The treatment for the people suffering from TB in Swaziland is tough. Not only are they isolated in these hospitals, but also the drug regimen is very tough. Multiple pills and injections every day, and the treatment, the side effects, diarrhea, vomiting, it seems it's almost worse than actually having TB itself.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's why, you know, for different advocacy groups are sort of promoting different angles of what it is about TB they want to get to. With Doctors Without Borders, it's very much about developing new drugs. It's decentralized care and developing new drugs, and it's a real issue because you're finding that to take this regime, you are often, it's highly toxic, so you automatically start to get this sort of rheumatism where you get aches and pains in your body, and so you're unable to do the active things you might have done. So if in Beggy's case he was a builder, he can no longer build. He was a soccer player, he can't play soccer any longer. It's too painful. And then compounded to that, a lot of people do start to get hearing loss, and for many people that's permanent. So you may cure the TB, but you end up deaf. And there's a lot of people we met in that situation. I mean, you've got to remember that for the treatment, it's a 2-year plan that involves 6 to 8 months of injections and pills every day. And the amount of pills and injections you have, Doctors Without Borders have estimated that it's approximately 240 injections and 14,600 pills you will have consumed in curing your TB.
That's just amazing, and you portray that in the documentary TB Silent Killer, where Becky, the young soccer player, the construction worker, at some point almost feels like giving up. He says to the doctor, you try taking all these pills. It's just impossible.
Yeah, absolutely. And then that was the thing with Becky. He started to, give over. You've got the disease, first of all, and then you've got these toxic pills. But then there's a whole new realm of mental health issues. People suffer, there's huge levels of depression because you don't see an end to it. It's just never ending. And, day after day after day, you're taking these pills and having these injections and not able to do the things you want. You get to a point where you just think, is this worth it? Is this really worth it? And that's what you see happen to Beggy in the course of the film. And one doctor told us that, she's seen such high levels of depression that people have actually committed suicide.
The film TB Silent Killer also portrays the nurses involved, and they seem very much to be the real heroes of this documentary in many ways, because it seems like they face risks in catching TB themselves.
Yeah, absolutely, and several nurses have caught TB. And I think that it's not only the risks of catching TB, it's also the decisions they're forced to make because these drugs are, it's a cocktail of drugs. It's a mixture of drugs, and nobody actually knows, there's no sort of defined level of these drugs that's necessarily perfect for everybody. So there is a bit of, try a bit of this, try a bit of that involved in the process of treating. And I think that during the course of the film, we see a doctor have to make an incredibly tough decision about how she treats one of her patients, Beggy's sister Zandile. And for her to allow me to film that and to put that out there in the documentary, I think is incredibly brave. Dr. Erkin was just phenomenal. Of course she was worried at first. Decisions to make, the sorts of decisions she made, where it could potentially cause things to be worse for the patient, is not great. However, obviously she had no alternative because the patient at that time was severely sick, and was throwing up her medication, throwing out everything she ate, so she ran the risk of dying anyway. And that's the daily battles these doctors and nurses are fighting. Every day there's a new decision that often that decision is kind of based on a gut instinct or experience, but experience from the field, from other patients that they've dealt with. And I think that's the difficulty because, as I say, these drugs are so old. Everybody has a different sort of makeup. And then when you're mixing it with ARVs as well, it just overcomplicates it all. And so therefore, yeah, I totally agree. And the nurses in the hospital as well, I mean, they're amazing, you know, those guys and what they do.
For you and your film crew, were you in any danger at all? Were you at risk at all in catching TB yourselves?
Yeah, we're in risk of catching the bacteria, of having that passed on to us. So, you know, it's probably highly likely that we may well have received a strain of the bacteria, whether that's from one of the MDR patients or the extensively drug-resistant patients. But, I mean, thankfully for us, we're healthy our bodies are strong. So if we did receive the bacteria, then our body will have fought it, and it will now just be sitting in us. So the only, you know, so the risk to us is more one of the future. You know, I guess the highest risk to me is, you know, often, or to Becky Stewart, who worked with me. You know, we work in third world countries all the time, and I guess the biggest risk is that we're in a road traffic accident or something and we get infected blood. And if we were to contract, say, HIV through infected blood and our immune system is compromised, we may well then get whichever TB it is that's in our system. But assuming we stay healthy, then we should be fine.